All right, let's get right into it today. We are tackling a real clash of titans here, a legal battle that changed how we look at power between states and tribal sovereignty.
You could say it's almost like a game of tug of war with some pretty high stakes.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court is the referee in the middle of it all.
Right.
We are talking about California v. Cabazon Band of Mission Indians.
Definitely a landmark case.
Yeah, a landmark case that went way beyond just, you know, high stakes bingo.
Oh, absolutely. But those bingo games were definitely right at the heart of it.
For sure.
It's really fascinating. You know, this case just exposed how much tension there is between state authority and tribal self-governance.
It did.
Like, it forced everyone to really deal with the limits of what states could do on tribal lands.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about economic activities.
Especially when it's about money, right?
Exactly.
It's interesting, though, how something that seems as simple as bingo, you know, could cause such a huge legal battle.
Right.
Can you kind of set the scene for us? What was actually happening back then?
Okay, so picture this. California, 1980s.
Okay.
The Cabazon and Morongo bands of Mission Indians, they're looking for ways to boost their economy, right?
Yeah.
Opportunities are limited, so they decide to use their sovereign status.
Okay.
To their advantage. And they launch bingo operations and card clubs right on their reservations.
Right.
And these weren't just like, you know, small-time games.
Right, right.
We're talking high-stakes ventures here, attracting players from all over.
Wow.
And bringing in some serious cash for the tribes.
So the tribes are trying to become economically independent.
Exactly.
And then California jumps in and tries to enforce state gambling laws right, on tribal land. It seems like that was bound to cause conflict.
Oh, it absolutely did. California argued that its state laws, you know, the ones that set limits on bingo prizes and restricted those card games, they said those should apply on reservations too.
Makes sense.
And their justification, they pointed to Public Law 280, which, you know, gave some states like California a bit of criminal jurisdiction on tribal lands.
So that's where things get really interesting.
Yeah.
Public Law 280. So the big question was, did this law actually give California the power to regulate tribal gaming or not?
Right.
That's a tough one.
A very tricky question. And the Supreme Court, they had to really dig into Public Law 280 to figure out if it gave California the right to just completely ban gambling on the reservations.
Okay.
Or if it was just about regulating it. And that's where the whole prohibitory versus regulatory distinction, that's where it became super important.
Yeah, it sounds like walking a legal tightrope.
Oh, for sure.
So how did the court end up interpreting Public Law 280?
Well, California wasn't saying no to all gambling. Mm-hmm. They had their own state-run lottery going on at the same time.
Good point.
So their goal was more about, you know, controlling how gambling worked, not getting rid of it completely.
I see. So it's kind of like how states can set rules for selling alcohol but can't just ban tribal liquor stores?
Exactly.
While still letting other liquor stores do business. That's what we're talking about here, right?
You got it. Yeah. And the Supreme Court, they saw right through what California was trying to do.
Right.
You know, using Public Law 280 to exert control, they said, nope, California's laws are about regulating, not prohibiting.
Okay.
Which means they don't have the power to enforce them on tribal land.
So basically a message about the limits of state power.
Exact.
When it comes to tribal sovereignty, especially when we're talking about how they make money.
Yeah.
But wait, there's another piece of this puzzle, right? Something about the federal government.
Oh, right. The federal government had already given the okay to the tribes' gaming ordinances.
Interesting.
Showing they supported these economic activities.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got another layer, right? Yeah. It's not just tribes versus the state.
Right.
Now it's federal policy going up against state law.
So it's a three-way showdown. The state wants control, the tribes want to be economically independent, and the federal government is backing the tribes. So how did the Supreme Court handle this?
Well, in a pretty big decision, they sided with the tribes and the feds.
Wow.
They said federal interests, you know, like boosting tribal self-sufficiency, those were more important than what California was worried about, especially since, well, there was no proof that the tribes' gaming was connected to any kind of criminal activity.
So it was a clear win for tribal sovereignty.
Definitely.
And a message that states can't just, like, impose their own rules on tribal businesses whenever they want.
Right.
But I'm guessing not everyone was happy with this decision.
You're right. There were some who disagreed. Justice Stevens actually wrote a dissenting opinion.
Okay.
Justices O'Connor and Scalia joined him on that. They were worried that if tribes had too much freedom in this area, things could get out of hand.
I see.
You know, without state oversight, there could be problems with unregulated stuff happening on tribal lands.
It's a valid point.
Yeah.
Unchecked power can be a bit risky, even if it's in the hands of sovereign entities.
For sure.
Did the majority opinion address those concerns at all?
They did. They put their trust in federal oversight.
Yeah.
Saying agencies like the Bureau of Indian Affairs, you know, they can make sure things were running responsibly.
Okay.
And deal with any issues that might pop up. They basically argued that the feds, because they already approved the tribe's gaming,
right,
they were in a better spot to keep an eye on things than the state was.
So tribal sovereignty is protected, but with the feds acting as a safety net, it's a delicate balance for sure.
Absolutely.
This whole prohibitory versus regulatory thing that the court used for Public Law 280, did that become like a test for other cases later on?
Oh, totally. The Cabazon case, it set a really important precedent. That distinction, it became the key to figuring out if Public Law 280 even applied in similar situations.
Okay.
So if a state law basically bans something outright, it might fall under the state's power on tribal land.
Right.
Because it's criminal jurisdiction. But if the state allows the activity but just wants to control how it works.
Yeah.
Then Public Law 280 probably doesn't give them that power.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's not just about whether a law affects something happening on tribal land. It's about the very nature of that state law itself.
Exactly.
It seems like the court was really deliberate in drawing that line.
Oh yeah, they definitely were. This area of law, it's complicated.
Oh, for sure.
But the Cabazon case, it really brought some much needed clarity. It confirmed that tribes have inherent sovereignty over their lands and their economic activities. But at the same time, it acknowledged that the feds have a role to play in making sure things are governed responsibly.
This wasn't just about legal technicalities, though, right? This case had real-world implications.
Oh, absolutely.
What was really at stake for the tribes in this whole fight?
For the Cabazon and Morongo bands, this was about way more than just some abstract legal battle. This was about their survival. Their gaming operations, they brought in crucial revenue, money they needed for essential services, for creating jobs.
Yeah.
It was a path towards being economically self-sufficient.
Right.
It was about their ability to control their own future.
I see.
Free from the state trying to interfere.
That's powerful. A legal battle with real human stories at its heart.
Definitely.
It wasn't just about bingo. It was about their right to decide their own destiny. It really makes you think about what happened after this decision. Did things change in the world of tribal gaming?
Oh, the Cabazon case had a massive impact on tribal gaming.
Okay.
It directly led to the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act being passed in 1988.
Oh, wow.
Which basically set the rules for how tribal gaming works with states today.
So it wasn't just a win in court. It actually reshaped the whole landscape.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. I'm curious about the economic side of things. We hear so much about how much money tribal gaming generates. Did this case play a role in that growth?
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Tribal gaming now brings in over $40 billion every year.
$40
billion. $40 billion. In this case, it was a key part of making that happen. It provided the legal groundwork for tribes to develop their economies and create opportunities for their communities.
It's an incredible legacy.
Yeah.
The Cabazon case was a turning point. It gave tribes the power to control their economic destinies.
Yeah.
And it shifted the balance of power between states, tribes, and the federal government.
And its impact, it's still being felt today.
It is.
Even as new forms of gaming are emerging, the principles from Cabazon, they're still guiding courts and policymakers as they try to navigate the whole world of tribal sovereignty and state authority.
Well, speaking of new forms of gaming, the digital age brings its own set of challenges and opportunities.
Right.
Like online platforms and virtual casinos. How do you think states will approach these new areas when it comes to tribal sovereignty?
That's the big question, isn't it?
It is.
The Cabazon case gives us a framework.
It does.
But how those principles apply to the digital world, that's still being figured out. Will states try to control tribal online platforms more? Will the federal government need to step in with new regulations? These are questions we'll probably be debating in courts and legislatures for years to come.
It's a fascinating issue, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it more in future deep dives as the gaming world keeps changing. But for now, let's shift gears a bit and go back to those dissenting opinions. Justice Stevens raised some concerns about potential downsides to tribal gaming without limits.
Right.
Have those concerns actually played out in the years since the Cabazon decision?
That's a tough one to answer. There have definitely been cases where tribal gaming operations have come under scrutiny,
okay,
especially when it comes to how they're regulated and the potential social impacts. But it's important to remember these aren't issues that are unique to tribal gaming. They exist in the commercial gaming industry as well.
So it's not that tribal gaming is inherently more likely to have problems. It's more about the bigger challenge of finding that balance between economic development and responsible regulation across the entire gaming industry.
Exactly. And the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, which came about because of Cabazon,
yeah,
it set up a framework for tribes, states, and the feds to work together to deal with these concerns. It's not a perfect system, but it has changed over time to try to minimize any potential problems.
So the Cabazon case really started a nationwide conversation about how to balance tribal sovereignty with the need for responsible gaming. And it's a conversation that's still going on today.
It is, and it highlights the unique legal and political position of tribes in the U.S. They are sovereign entities,
right?
But they also operate within this complex system of federal and state laws.
This case really shows how important it is to understand the nuances of federal Indian law.
Yes.
It's not just some historical relic. It's a living body of law that's still shaping the relationship between tribes and the rest of society.
I completely agree. The Cabazon case shows how resilient and resourceful tribes are in asserting their sovereignty and pursuing economic self-determination.
For sure.
It also reminds us that legal battles can have long-lasting effects. They shape not just the legal world, but the lives of real people and communities.
This has been a truly insightful look into a case that continues to have an impact on the legal and political landscape. Before we wrap things up, what are the key takeaways our listeners should remember about California v. Cabazon Band of Mission Indians, especially those in the legal profession?
First, Cabazon made it clear that Public Law 280 can't be used by states to take over tribal sovereignty when it comes to economic activities that aren't completely banned by state law. That prohibitory versus regulatory distinction is critical, and courts are still using it to make decisions today.
That distinction seems pretty straightforward at first glance.
Yeah.
But as we've discussed, it can get pretty tricky when you actually apply it.
It definitely can. Second, Cabazon showed how important federal support is for tribes when they're trying to develop their economies. The fact that the federal government backed the tribes' gaming ordinances was a big factor in the court's decision.
That three-way dynamic between tribes, states, and the feds is a recurring theme in federal Indian law, isn't it?
It definitely is. And lastly, Cabazon is a great example of how legal wins can lead to real improvements in people's lives and communities. The economic empowerment that resulted from this case has had a profound impact on so many tribal members.
Very well said. California v. Cabazon Band of Mission Indians is a case every lawyer should study and understand. It's a landmark decision that has shaped the world of tribal gaming.
It has.
Both legally and economically. And it continues to be relevant to discussions about tribal sovereignty, state authority, and the constantly changing gaming landscape.
It's a story about legal strategy, economic power, and the ongoing fight for self-determination.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
You're welcome.
We hope you've gained a better understanding of this fascinating and important case. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer for sure.
Yeah.
There have been times when tribal gaming operations have, you know, been looked at closely, especially in terms of regulations and the impact they might have on society. But we got to remember this. Those aren't issues that only come up with tribal gaming.
Right.
You see them in the commercial gaming industry, too.
That's true.
So it's not that tribal gaming is like automatically more likely to have problems.
Yeah.
It's really a broader issue,
yeah,
of how to balance economic growth with, you know, making sure things are regulated responsibly across the entire gaming world.
Right, right.
And that Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, the one that came after Cabazon,
yeah,
it created a system for tribes and states and the feds to work together.
Okay.
You know, to address these concerns. It's not perfect, but it has evolved to try and like minimize any potential downsides.
But so Cabazon really sparked a national discussion.
It did.
About how to balance tribal sovereignty with responsible gaming.
Absolutely.
And that conversation is still going on today.
It is, and it really highlights that unique legal and political status that tribes have in the U.S. They're sovereign, but they also have to operate within this web of federal and state laws?
It's complicated.
That is.
This case really underscores why it's so important to understand the ins and outs of federal Indian law.
For sure.
It's not just a history lesson. It's an active area of law that is shaping the relationship between tribes and the rest of society, even now.
Couldn't agree more. The Cabazon case, it's proof of how resilient and resourceful tribes are, you know, and standing up for their sovereignty and going after economic self-determination.
Absolutely.
It's also a good reminder that legal battles, they can have ripple effects.
Yeah.
To shape not just the legal world, but also real people's lives and communities.
It really does. So before we wrap up this deep dive, what are the key takeaways you think our listeners should remember about California v. Cabazon Band of Mission Indians, especially for those in the legal profession?
Okay, well, first, Cabazon really solidified that idea that states can't use Public Law 280 to take control of tribal sovereignty when it comes to economic activities that aren't completely banned by state law.
Okay.
That whole prohibitory versus regulatory difference, that's huge, and courts still rely on it today.
It seems pretty straightforward at first.
It does.
But, like we talked about, it can get pretty nuanced when you're actually applying it.
Yeah, absolutely. Second, Cabazon showed us just how vital federal support is for tribes when they're trying to develop their economies. The feds, backing the tribes' gaming, that played a big role in the court's decision.
That three-way relationship between tribes, states, and the feds.
Yeah.
It seems to pop up a lot in federal Indian law.
It definitely does. And lastly, Cabazon. It's a powerful example of how legal victories can bring about real, tangible improvements for people and communities. That economic boost from this case, it's had a huge impact on so many tribal members.
It really has. California v. Cabazon Band of Mission Indians, it's a must-read for any lawyer. A landmark decision that shaped tribal gaming. Legally and economically. And it's still relevant today when we talk about tribal sovereignty, state authority, and this ever-changing world of gaming.
It's a story of legal strategy, economic power, and that constant fight for self-determination.
Well said. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
Of course, my pleasure.
We hope you've gained a better understanding of this really fascinating and important case. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.